Hi everyone, my name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot on our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. The other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show at your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything as well. This small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
Before we get started here, though, I want to tell you about our new monthly guidebook / workbook called The Motivated Musician. It's geared towards serious musicians, and it offers challenges, exercises, professional advice, and more to help keep your career and your musical life on track. Also, as an extra perk, members get exclusive discounts from MyMusicMasterclass.com. So if you want to learn more, go to MyMusicMasterclass.com and you'll see the subscribe link in the menu. Click that and you'll be good to go. All right, everyone. We are here today with Mastina Nazarian, and she's a teacher of Alexander Technique, and she also has a degree from Berklee School of Music for guitar and composition, I think. And she's a black belt in Aikido. I mean, what the heck? What's going on here? You got a lot of skills. And also, I believe that you are 14 hours ahead of me in New York, and you're in Melbourne, Australia at this time. So what's going on? This is an amazing resume you got here, and also, you know, an amazing time difference to go with it. How's everything going?
Hey, it's going all right, considering everything, and thank you for having me here.
Yeah.
And thanks for all you do, you know, with the availability of so much great resource for musicians, and especially in a time like this when we need all the inspiration and sort of kicking the butt that we can get. So so thank you for embarrassing me appropriately with that reading of a resume.
I like it, because I think we're going to end up talking about a lot of this stuff.
Sure.
We can start from the beginning here, not necessarily the beginning of your life, but the beginning of what you do. Alexander Technique, when I was in Manhattan School of Music, I remember them teaching or bringing in someone to do a little seminar or something like that. I believe now it's a little more mainstream, right? Juilliard has a complete program, is that true? And there's other schools that have embraced it. But I always knew that it was a really, really important thing as musician to understand, and I never got around to doing it. So this is going to be a good one for me too. I battled tendonitis when I was in college. I can tell you how I got over it, you know, and I bet a lot of it has to do with a lot of the same principles of Alexander Technique, which is that none of the anti-inflammatory or the physical therapy did anything until I was able to correct what my body was doing. So I'm assuming that this is the direction we're going in here. But, you know, you're a musician, like I said, a guitarist, which is going to go hand in hand with this. And you're an Alexander Technique teacher. And you also, I know you bring your Aikido into this. Is this correct? I want you to explain how you've kind of merged all this stuff together.
Yeah, sure. Well, when I was 5, so I'm going back to the beginning, there was a little bit of something called a revolution in Iran. So there was I was talking to another friend of mine who was talking about his experience growing up, but I felt like there was literally a bomb was going to drop any moment. And now when I realized how long that lasted, I realized that it's possible to actually get addicted to what guarding mechanisms your mind and your system has to develop, waiting for the bomb to drop. And you know, someone could be growing up in, you know, the quietest town in Illinois and experience something that causes that in them. And depending on how life goes, and if you do become attracted to something like a performance, whether that's a sports or music, there's an aspect of anxiety that can be very pervasive and also very, in my case, I think I'm only realizing now, having just decided to just completely cut the social media, what triggers are for wanting to go into that space where you're like, okay, I gotta guard myself. Something's gonna happen. Something's gonna happen. I've gotta guard myself. So, I think when I was 19, I was at Berkeley. There was, as you say, there's some people were taking lessons with Alexander Technique, some teachers around town, and not at Berkeley then, but I think now they have the Kenny Werner Performance Institute or something like
they
that.
They do. It's for the effortless mastery mainly, but it does have a lot to do with your body and scanning. And
Yeah, this kind of very useful things, especially to people who are, you know, at the formative stages of their development as an adult and also as a musician. And I think that feeling of wanting to achieve a lot, wanting to understand everything, wanting to get ahead, you know, it's just there's so many layers of things going on for a person's life. But on top of that, the ancestors that we look up to as musicians and all this stuff can really form it into a little bit of a ball, which I suppose you could call life. I mean, could be that someone going into medical school could experience some of these things or whatever. But I remember someone said, hey, you know, there's this thing you do. You lay on your back, you put some books under your head, and it's like really incredible. You just lay on the floor and you just get up and you feel great afterwards. And I think I was about 19 around then. And then I spoke to some singers who were taking a break because of voice trouble, and they were talking about Alexander Technique. And it wasn't until a few years later when I was in Australia where I could afford to take some lessons because there was a teacher at the conservatory there and it wasn't so expensive. And I think it did help me a lot. It especially helped me unknot that ball. You know, I was like, oh, okay, whoa, wow, all right, the bomb's not dropping anymore, you know, let's check this out. And I think there's aspects of it that can be, I suppose, relate to the somatics of psychology. I don't know if you're familiar, or maybe your audience is familiar with kind of what that word relates to.
But explain.
It can be a wide, wide, wide area to explore. But I think some of Alexander Technique can relate to what we experience as humans in our body. And then some of it can be very kind of intellectual. And the thing in a good practice of life or of learning a new skill, we want to bring those things together. So we're not just, you know, intellectualizing like musical feel, but we are also able to tune in into how we relate to it with our coordination or with the body feeling. You know, fast forward 15 years later, after I graduated from Alexander training, which was interesting to say the least, it lasted 3 very interesting years and I learned a lot of different things. I realized that there's a lot of pressure to just to be in the soma, to be in the flesh, to be in the body, and almost give control to the teacher's hands.
Right.
You know, and some people were like really like geared for that. This was their like spa treatment, you know, and they could afford to go every week and have the hands, feel great, off you go. You don't know why you feel great. You just know that you did and you paid $90 and that was cool. And I'd start to question whether that's really another layer of addiction. And also whether the general public and also people who really needed the most for that, for example, and musicians who can't definitely like afford that kind of repetitive, expensive body therapy, whether that would be something that's really available to them. And there's a lot of things that they can learn there. So a lot of question marks came up. And I think that's when I started to try out my own learning skills. And that's why I was always interested in martial arts. I thought I'll try Aikido.
Right. So, I mean, for some people that don't really understand what Alexander technique is, I feel, and I may be wrong, but I feel that it may be lumped in with Pilates. But they seem to differ in a lot of ways, right? I mean, it seems like Alexander technique is a lifestyle. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, it can be viewed like that. And I mean, I understand kind of where you're coming from. And I suppose for a lot of people, Pilates can be a lifestyle as well. And I like the differentiated like this, where Alexander as a person was, and he died in the mid-50s, and where that information can be useful in 2020 is very different. And also there's, for example, practitioners of Pilates who will differ from another practitioner of Pilates, and the same thing in Alexander technique. I suppose what I'd like to parallel Alexander technique, or the way I like to think it's useful, is like if you're talking right now, we have basically one processor, one attention processor. And, you know, as musicians, we get really, really skilled at dividing and training our processing of information and the way we pay attention to things. You know, if you think of a drummer who's just starting out, and then someone like Brian Blade, obviously there's a difference of attention. They both have a pair of arms, a pair of legs, a drum set, right? But their skill development, and not talking about inherent talent, is something that relates to how they can pay attention and problem solve as they're doing an activity. So some of that can come out in Pilates, because then your teacher can layer, starting from a simple exercise, and make it more and more and more, how do you say it, like challenging, right? So the way I like to think Alexander can be helpful to musicians is, how can you learn to solve the problem of paying attention to yourself in space, and what movements are going to be most manageable as you're practicing or performing. For example, let's talk about the guitar, or, you know, I know you play do you play upright, or do you play
I play mostly electric, but you know, I used to play upright, so yeah, I know the differences and all the things you got to do for that.
So when you, like, let's just talk about something that hopefully the listeners can imagine. As far as when you think about, like, a Fender bass and ergonomics, what's the biggest challenge? What's one of the biggest challenge of ergonomics?
Well, on electric bass, it would be the tilt of the wrist, and your shoulders probably being too far up, and things like that, at least for me. But, you know, I don't know if I'm being too specific for the question.
No, I mean, it's sort of spot on. There's, with instruments, most instruments, there's a problem of rotation of the torso, you know? And for guitar, depending on, I have quite short arms compared to the design of most guitars, so I focus a long time ago, I got a Parker Fly, and that's really sets me up well for not having to have a big hunk of timber under my picking arm,
right?
You know, so that makes it a lot easier for me to have that part of my shoulder available to movements, you know. So when we have to rotate around something, usually we'll compensate on one part of our like the left or the right part of our torso. And then that can be something that we may also do when we drive or when we chop vegetables or when we using, you know, cell phones or something like that. So I like to see how I can teach someone where the parts of the torso relate to each other in a position where there is like perfect stacking so that there is the most amount of expansion between the muscles that are connected to the bones. Does that make sense to someone or not? That's my problem that I have to solve, and I have some really basic tools that are maybe also used in sports training to help the person find out what movements are possible between the different parts of their torso, because this is the torso that they use when they have to rotate around the guitar, so then, or the bass, so then maybe they can be better placed to pay attention better as they're doing an activity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. You know, and when I remember talking to you a while back, because, you know, we were discussing making a video for my music masterclass, which is, you know, still on the table when everything calms down in the world. Hopefully it does.
Sure.
but one of the things that you'd mentioned is that you were able to do this virtually, meaning through Zoom or some kind of video conferencing, which I always thought was very interesting, because, you know, what I thought about Alexander Technique was I always assumed there was someone touching your shoulder, you know, someone right behind you adjusting your movements. But you're saying you're able to produce results without hands-on?
Well, there's a few different schools in Alexander Technique that do that. Some of it is, I would relate it more to positive psychology, which can also be great.
Right.
And some people are used to that, and they may have a background of that. And I think some of what they use at the Berkeley Clinic with Kenny Werner, Effortless Mastery, leans a little bit more towards that. You know, it gives a general understanding of something that the Barbara Conable came up with called body mapping. And that can be really useful to some people. The thing is that the body mapping framework works on a premise, and it might be too much detail, but that there should be a forward pushing curve to the lumbar or the lower part of the spine.
Okay.
And it doesn't really talk about what movements are possible in the lower part of the spine in order to answer the multi-million-dollar question, how to use your core properly.
Right, that is a big one.
Yeah, so how do you use the core properly is something that when we have a muscular premise of dealing with may not be so useful because we take different positions, especially when we're playing music and especially when most of our attention is going to playing music, you know, so to have, you know, to use your core to do the rotation that you need to do around the, you know, yeah, I can think of, you know, something like an alto saxophone that is, you know, there's the breath involved and then there's the weight of the thing or the tenor or, but even with the guitar, you know, it's like, it's really easy for the core muscles to just go flab because I'm so concentrating on playing my scales or arpeggios faster.
Right.
But if I can teach someone through tools that are very prevalent in sports training, and I learned from this wonderful man named John DeMasiero, how to start by teaching the spatial visual system. So you can do this virtually very well, because what does the spatial visual system trained by, it's a little bit like ear training for the eyes. And we humans can actually train this facility to create images very easily using language processing. So So, you know, I discussed with someone, hey, you know, there's this point that you can find in the middle of the top of your sternum, and listeners maybe can do this. And this point that you can find at the top of your sternum before you get to the soft bit that we call the throat, this point is, in our system, we're going to relate to that point as the throat. And if you imagine your torso from the front, this designates the top of your torso. Well, I don't need to touch it for them to have a feeling of it. It is simply there.
Yeah, I see.
You know, and it becomes a tool of the mind. So the concept of the tool of the mind is a very kind of well-established educative system that has a, you know, long history in how to teach and help someone create tools to teach themselves. So then, you know, there's a point in the front of the torso. So hey, what do you want to do with it? Well, is it possible to find out how it relates to, you know, this other point that I'm going to teach them? Oh, okay, yeah, oh, yeah, I see how these two relate. Well, is it possible for you to relate to another point? And we basically start to make a geometry of the torso. And then I know for myself, I've become very acquainted to what my habitual geometry is. And that's when I haven't put any attention on my, you know, where my body's in space. And I might be just like putting so much attention talking to Adam or playing my scales really faster.
Right.
So if I know what my habitual geometry is, which let's just say the core, what most listeners can relate to as the gym core or the Pilates core, is flabbed out. I'm all flabbed out, okay? And but through this action coding system, which I just mentioned, that, you know, one bony landmark being related to one part of the torso and so on, I can... The person can reason with me, and I can reason with them, and we can build a structure that makes sense, that they can create movements with. And the exercise should only be 3 seconds.
Wow.
So, for example, I have a lovely student who suffered about a decade of pain until she was told that she has multiple, she has MS. So now she does an infusion therapy and her pain has gone away. And I've never met someone who's so happy that they have multiple sclerosis because she can play again.
Yeah.
And that's after a decade. Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's after a decade of being told you're not doing your hand exercises correctly. So it's like a call out to people. It's like, there's some incredible physiotherapists out there. There's some incredible neurologists out there, but try to seek a second opinion before you go for the knife.
yeah. No, that is for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're working on, because, you know, there's lockdowns here, we're working through Skype. And after 2 or 3 lessons, she knows the premise of what it is we're working with. And she can do the experiments herself. And what does that entail? I said, yeah, you know what? You're working on Zoom, you're working on your computer. Why don't you set yourself up with the QuickTime or whatever and reason out your guiding orders and do the 3-second exercise and then watch what happened mm-hmm. in your little video that you make of yourself to see if what you instructed yourself and the directions that the movements you did went in that 3 seconds that you recorded on your desktop matched what you wanted. And so then that is the exercise that improves the visuospatial system. If anyone comes out and promises anyone that I'm going to take your RSI or pain away with a magic pill, I mean, most musicians would be like, really? Are you?
Yeah, exactly.
But if someone says, look, let's learn something together, and even in the person who the synapses of the brain is being attacked by themselves, like someone with MS. This is making sense to them.
Right.
You know, so this is not a magic pill for her, but she used to pervasively pull her shoulders back towards each other. And that's something that as a society, we are taught that that's good posture. And now that she's not doing that, she's like, huh, this is so much easier. I can find a different way to be when I'm working, you know?
Yeah.
And she's coming back to playing the guitar, and she's coming back to doing music as well.
I mean, when I had tendonitis in both wrists and I had gone through physical therapy and anti-inflammatories and whatever I could do, you know, braces, ice, mineral, you know, topicals.
Wow.
This was in the 90s. And the only thing that really helped me, because of course you can ply yourself full of drugs and reduce inflammation, but it's just going to come back if your technique is out of whack. So one of the things I remember doing with my left hand that was critically important, and I think I mentioned this in another podcast, was that I would play one note, let's say a G on the E string or something like that, with my second finger, and then I would touch my other fingers and see how loose they were. And if they felt tight, I would say to myself, why the hell are my other fingers so tight when they're not playing the note? Do you know what I mean? Like, shouldn't the only pressure be the note I'm pressing? Like, what are these other fingers doing all tense? And, you know, the same with my right hand. Well, it was arched over the body of the bass, you know, to play finger style.
Yeah.
Just like a classical guitarist would do. Why the hell is my shoulder up? You know, like, and when I started doing that, I was able to play faster without practicing as much. My tone was better. I played lighter and more relaxed, but I got a fatter tone. And all these things kind of opened up. And it sounds like, you know, a similar idea or a concept. I'm sure that there's a lot that I could have learned from formally training. And, you know, I should probably do it. You know, I actually have a pinched nerve right now from something random in my neck.
Yes.
And it's making my right arm slightly numb. And it'll go away, but it's a serious pain in the ass. And I mean, I can only fix it with posture and, you know, waiting it out and doing the right things and not being stupid and in waiting for it to heal. It's all about the body, right? I mean,
wow. Well, that's an incredible story. I mean, yeah, I can't imagine having pain in both wrists, and that you are able to manage it by using your intelligence and asking questions. Well, what's going on here? Oh, why that? And I think that's really, really important. And the other thing it signifies is that the person's not giving up hope, and they're saying, well, what control do I have? Control in a good way, you know, not control in sort of like suppressing emotions or whatever, but in control in the sense of, what do I have left? Oh, well, I can ask a question about how I need to organize my hands or wrists, and how does that relate to the torso, and so on.
Yeah.
And in the end, it actually saves time, because you're more efficient.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also you've
got the word I would use.
And you you put yourself in a situation where you're probably actually more interested in playing. And, you know, then that, you know, someone could say, oh, well, that relates to a nice kind of endorphin release you feel, where you feel like you're in a position of control and you're exploring something. And that can be very attention expanding, you know, rather than when we're like, oh my God, I wonder when the bomb's going to drop, you know, experience of life, you know, it's like, shit, bomb's going to drop, right? No, it's not. It's not Mastinay.
Yeah. It's like put into you, you know, I mean, it's like this from our ancestors in the cave, you know, trying not to get eaten by saber-toothed tigers. And now it's, you know, it happens in real life as well, like you said, with bombs, you know. It's hard to get rid of that.
Yeah, and, you know, and I think hearing other people's stories is really important. I think that's the power of the podcast. And, you spend more time on the computer yourself and you dealing with this pinched nerve. And, I mean, I like to say that podcasts are awesome because we hear other people's story and it's like, oh, yeah, that thing about, you know, fight and flight response is a universal thing. And that can almost put us at peace, you know?
You'd hope, yeah.
Like, I'm not the only one who's feeling that way, or I'm not the only one who's going through this patch of pain. I'm wondering if I can learn something from this. So, I mean, one thing we can do is rather than, because I promised a long time ago, but so much has happened since wanting to make those videos, is that, you know, I can pretend to be the teacher and you can pretend to be the student and we can just make the videos and put them on my music masterclass and see what happens, you know.
I think it'd be helpful, you know. It's one of those things. And you know, before we move on to that, like, I just wanted to say that I think some people have the perception, it's kind of like this old adage where some people were scared to practice with a metronome because they would think that they'd play more mechanically, which is total bullshit, you know. I mean, you could do, you know, but I feel like the same is can be said with Alexander technique, where some people might say, well, I don't want to be stiff on stage. I don't want to just be standing stoically like that. And from my understanding, you know, dancers do Alexander technique, all kinds of people that move around. It's not that you have to sit in one spot and be perfectly in a meditative state, right?
Yeah, you look at me, I'm a bit all over the place. But I can tell that, you know, compared to where I was as a 10-year-old, my daughter is not. You know, I was like, okay, I'm doing something right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm providing my kids with a better environment than I was provided. Okay, tick. Purpose in life. So, yeah, I mean, to answer that question, I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, this same question is funny, is asked in, I was listening to a music theory podcast and with music theorists, and they're like, yeah, some people think if they're really going to know the innards of a bass and a string quarter, then they're not going to enjoy it. No, they are. They're going to enjoy it more.
Right.
You know? And, you know, for example, I always say his last name incorrectly. It's Julian Lange.
Yeah, he's guitarist. He's a monster player. He's great.
Yeah, he's just, you know, a child prodigy. And at some point in his life, he got into a situation where he did a 3-year Alexander training. And
totally.
I look at his videos, you know, I'm subscribed to his channel. I get, another one. And, you know, he's just playing solo guitar in his bedroom or whatever. I'm like, wow. I don't think he looks stiff. I don't know. I mean, you know, your listeners can check it out. But
yeah, you can't tell.
Referencing that, like when I was talking about the process that I teach with this way of applying Alexander's principles to lengthening and widening the torso, and the person can teach themselves. The thing is that you're teaching your attention, you're teaching your reasoning, and you're teaching your memory. Now, if those three things, attention, reasoning, and memory, can become stiff, I mean, they're extremely dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I've asked the big question of, well, why the teacher's hands and a specific position? Isn't it really about a reasoned understanding of what movements are possible?
Yeah.
And so, that there's a lot of big questions. Like when I finished the, you know, at the end of that $30,000 drop bomb of doing my training, it was like another teacher comes in, you know, who had, you know, she was one of the masters, and she come in and say, you guys need to make sure you take lessons regularly or else you're going to lose it. I'm like, I thought this was education. What's it?
the meaning of life.
And then I was like, what is this Freudian psychoanalysis version? Like, come on, guys. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be involved with that. So, yeah, I mean, if anyone is listening to this is interested in finding out, like, I'm just, you know, we're all in lockdown, and whatever they can pay to find out more, you know, and sometimes it can be as we making a Zoom, taking that time to make a Zoom video together, and so they can see what's happening with their shoulders, and they'll be like, yeah, got it, you know?
Yeah, what's your website so everyone can know?
It's rediscoverease.com.
Rediscoverease.com. Good.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and just so you know, well, you can see it printed, but it's Mastina Nazarian. I'm saying your first name correctly, right? Or is it? Do I have a New York accent? That's possible.
I can say Adam.
Exactly.
Adam. Exactly. If I use my Farsi accent, it'd be Adam.
If you could say my name in Farsi, it'd be perfect, you know.
No, it's good.
Do you speak Farsi too?
I do. I get along. You know, I won't be able to do any, like, you know, political discourse. But so maybe that's good.
So essentially, what I'm understanding is that no matter what instrument you play, if you're a singer or a horn player or a double bassist or a cellist, sitting or standing or harpist or whatever you do, it's simply aligning your body and paying attention to these things. And if you can do that, you will be able to perform better with less tension. I'm assuming that before a show, you'll be less stressed out as well, right? Because are you just less stressed out during the day? Is that maybe that's the question? Are you just less stressed out during the day from doing this? Some people meditate and some people do other things. Are you just less stressed out because your body is in alignment and you're scanning it?
Yeah, I suppose it could be like that. I like to sort of be forgiving. Some days I hate the world, you know, if we have to allow ourselves that.
Yeah, I mean, the world's insane, so.
Yeah, well, I suppose I've become more forgiving of myself, if not anything else. Not as in, like, well, I think as musicians we can be really, really sort of hard on ourselves. And sometimes it goes into, you know, it's part of what it is that we're pursuing. But, like, I don't really do full on, like, I don't lie on the floor anymore because I do have a little bit of, I think, for example, I'm pretty sure one of my legs is definitely a different height than the other. So I have a little bit of scoliosis, and I found that lying flat on the floor is not as productive for me. And I have a Pilates machine, and when I work on the Pilates machine, I actually, like, make quite a ramp so my upper torso is higher than it would be if I was all flat on one single surface.
Oh.
So that's a little bit of detail that, you know, we could work with someone on that on Zoom if they told me. If they're doing floor exercises that they love doing and it helps them, we can try to say, well, is there a better way that you can do this? Blah, blah, blah. No, it would be more exact. I mean, I'm going to be saying blah, blah, blah. But,
no,
you know.
Yeah, no, blah, blah, blah. I understand.
So I think it's a tool for growing, you know. Here's one of the things, like, it's a tool for maybe even becoming a little bit more okay with going outside of our comfort zone. Like, for example, I wanted to apply for this grant because the state government was giving some money out to musicians and artists and saying, like, okay, we're going to up the coronavirus grant fund. And I was scared. I was like, I never get a grant. No one knows me, blah, blah, blah. All this sort of, like, really being down on myself. And I just quickly came up with a project. This is the culmination of all the things that I'm sort of concerned with and care about. And just the luck of a draw and that extra money. So I got the grant. And then I completely freaked out. I was like, no, I'm not writing this music. Like, I'm not writing music for 11 people. I'm not writing a song cycle. Like, I'm not doing this. And it was like, calm down. Like, what else are you going to do? You're going to, you know.
You can't give the money back. You got to do something.
I can't give the money back. Mm. No.
You're locked in.
So then, yeah. So I think this is a great tool for saying, well, what's the worst going to happen? And now I'm like, wow. I'm like planning and setting up the steps necessary to eventually do something that I would have never dreamt I could do. And I think this has been a great set of tools, this Alexander technique, to have better reasoning. And whether that means being open to a bigger range of emotions as well, mm-hmm. but also being able to plan towards something.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if that makes sense, because through it, I've gotten a lot better at understanding how I process the world. So if that means sometimes being like, wow, today I really need to be angry.
Right. It's okay.
or today I really need to this happened the other day, 2 days ago. I was like, this bit of the composition, I'm doing the second sketches. This is not working. I can't do this, blah, blah, blah. I was like, you stay with that. And a couple of hours later, I just pick up a guitar and I was like, yep, that's it. That's the section. Whoa, that here it comes. Like, go for it. You know, write it down quickly. You know, so
right.
it, you know, so whatever mechanism we can have, and I think, and this is why I want anyone interested just to, you know, email me or get in touch, is I don't feel like I own this at all. I feel like it's something that is part of, how do we become better reasoning human beings as part of a community? And isn't that why we love music?
Right.
You know? So yeah, that's it really. You know, and if it helps someone with their body, okay, great.
Yeah, it's all connected, right? Your mind and your body. Happy mind, happy body. And this is another question, but since you practiced Aikido, do you do meditation as well? I know that there's meditation within Aikido. And do you do that before performances, or you don't?
I suppose I do in a way. I mean, it depends on, like, I could sit in a cross-legged or sit on my, you know, heels, sit, you know, with my leg folded underneath me for quite a while. So I'm not averse to meditation, but I've never sort of, so how do I say this without offending anyone except the fact that I was raised in Iran. I was a few years there. I became very sensitive to what might be termed as group brainwashing.
Oh.
And then being at Alexander School, I realized some really interesting things, whether we're in Iran or not, about the power of group psychology, and some of the things can go wrong very quickly. So that's why I wouldn't say to someone, yeah, I meditate and I, you know, think of these words or affirmations. But I wouldn't say to someone, I don't do it, or that I don't like you because you do. But for me, I have to be very careful not to get involved with like something where I would sit with a group of 20 people, go to a silent retreat, not talk for a weekend, only eat lentil soup. And it's great. I have friends who do this and they love it. But I kind of have to make it up as I go. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know if that's the right answer to your question, but...
No, this is your answer.
Yeah, like...
Everyone has a different answer. That's the beauty of it.
I mean, it's funny because the last time, I think it was January 31st, I did a recording with my group and I was trying to be in a positive mood, but it was 40 degrees, which is 110, in the studio. And
yikes.
So I was like, we're just going to do the best we can. You know, and then my amazing singer, she'd been really ill, and she told me, she's like, look, I'm not doing really well. And I was like, okay, that's another $400 redoing the vocals, but it's going to work out. And so I suppose it's a matter of having, maybe I should say this, I think it's what Arnold Schoenberg says. He basically says, no matter how wacky your vision is about how you saw your music, whatever, you really got to believe in that vision. Like, someone knew how importantly you're believing in it, they would think you're certifiably insane. But that's how much you have to sort of like believe in your vision. So if that's like that's meditation to someone, well, can I make that practical? And can I include like 10 or 11 people in a group with that? And then when I feel really, I know like that really feeds me, you know, to like know that my actions and my thoughts can reverberate.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's sort of meditation, you know?
Hey, I mean, everyone has their own version. There's no right way to do it, you know?
Yeah, I hope so.
You know,
yeah.
I think that, you know, we've talked about a lot. And if any of you who are listening are either in pain or worried about injury, you know, seeking mental clarity or balance or anything else we touched on here, you know, this is definitely worth looking into. From what I know, it's very, very cool stuff that helps a lot of people. But thanks so much for, you know, coming on again and, you know, have a good day. Right now it's what?
Thank you.
It's the morning for you. It's nothing. It's night for me.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's Sunday morning.
You got the whole day.
I got the whole day to
make
some music. And thank you so much for everything you do for my music masterclass. And thanks for having this conversation, Adam. And I'm really glad to, yeah, if it was helpful to someone. And yeah, thanks again.
We will talk soon. And bye for now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail? You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformancepathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So, look forward to hearing from you.